The gist of what Epictetus taught is actually a wonderful distillation of what you find in A Course in Miracles, which is why I'm talking about him. Some of the main themes of his writings, and I'll read a couple, a few brief things for you in a moment, are the ideas that perception is interpretation, and it's not a fact. Perhaps the most important aspect of his work could be summed up in the Course's statement, seek not to change the world, choose to change your mind about the world. And the things that I'll read you, I think you'll find are extraordinary in terms of how they kind of look forward to the very things that we study in the Course. I always liked Epictetus. I first came into contact with him when I was a freshman in college, and I took an introductory philosophy course. And at this point, I don't remember anything that I read then. I know what I've read now, but I forget everything that I read that, except obviously he made a big impression on me. I remember when I came home for the first vacation, and one of my uncles was asking me what I was learning in school, the first thing I talked about was Epictetus, and he thought that was such a funny name that for the next several months he called me Epictetus. But there was something about his work even then when I was very, very young that kind of impressed me. And obviously when I read him again much later on, I could understand why. Let me just say a few very, very brief things about his background, just so you have a sense. Again, he was a Stoic. Stoicism began in the 4th to the 3rd century B.C. With a Greek by the name of Zeno, Z-E-N-O. And he did his teaching on a porch, and the Greek word for porch is stoa, S-T-O-A. That's where the word Stoic comes from. Well, that got followers of Zeno. Chrysippus was a disciple of his, and actually the next great figure is Epictetus, who was born 50 A.D. And he lived to ripe old age. I think he was 85 or so when he died. And one of his greatest disciples was probably the greatest Roman emperor that there was, Marcus Aurelius, who actually was a very fine man, unlike most of the Roman emperors. And he lived in the 2nd century. Epictetus, again, he was Roman because he was born in the Roman Empire, but he wrote in Greek. He was born a slave, and one of the famous stories about him, which gives an example of his philosophy and how he lived, whether the story is true or not, nobody knows, but it's always taught this way, that while he was a young man or a slave, he was kind of being abused by his master, who I think put his leg in a vise or something. Did something really cruel. And Epictetus calmly said, if you keep on doing this, you'll break my leg. And the man kept on doing it, broke his leg. And Epictetus said, you see, I told you to break my leg. And that was it. And he was always somewhat crippled after that for the rest of his life. He was later freed, and he then had a school where he taught. He was one of those few people who actually lived what he taught, and he was really looked up to as a great teacher, not only in terms of his philosophy, but certainly the way that he lived. He did no writing on his own. What we have is his writings came from a disciple of his, a student of his, who wrote down probably everything he said. That's Epictetus. Let me just read to you the statement that I took the title of the workshop from. All right. I should say that Epictetus believed in God. He believed that God created the world. And in a sense, God was responsible for everything that happened here. Unlike Zeno, who was, the founder of what we know of as Stoicism, he did not really deal with metaphysical things. Epictetus' focus was on how one lived a life here. And as any good Greek, his goal was that one should live a life of virtue, to be wise, to be educated, to be kind, not to make judgments. And so his focus was really more on ethics and morality rather than more esoteric philosophy. And so this is what he wrote. Remember that you are but an actor, acting whatever part the master, capital M, has ordained. It may be short or it may be long. If he wishes you to represent a poor man, do so heartily. In other words, if you're born poor, you're poor. If a cripple or a magistrate or a private man, in each case, act your part with honor. And this is something, again, that I'll kind of build the whole workshop on this. The idea is, and I'll illustrate this with reading a number of things in a moment. The idea is that don't try to change your station in life. Don't try and change the world around you. You change how you look at the world and act your part with honor. And from the Course's point of view, what acting our part with honor means is to practice forgiveness. In other words, what the text refers to as our special function. That rather than always trying to change a relationship and change the world around you, try to change how you look at the world around you. Right? To act your part with honor. And whether you're poor or you're rich, whether you're healthy or you're ill, what difference does it make? And from the Course's point of view, it doesn't make a difference, because the idea is not that you make your body better. The idea is that you use your body and your experiences here as a classroom in which you learn how to change your mind. And that this doesn't mean that you become passive and don't do anything in your life. It means whatever it is that you do, you kind of do with a grain of salt. You kind of do it. You build a career, you have a family, you have your relationships, but you take none of it seriously. Because the only thing here that you should take seriously is learning how that you're not here. All right, now, Epictetus doesn't go that far, certainly, but he does come pretty close in terms of enunciating what one's attitude ought to be. So let me just read you a number of things that he said. First thing, which would be illustrative of that line right near the end of the text, trials are but lessons that we fail to learn, presented once again, that the purpose, once we are here and in our life, the purpose of all the situations we are in is to help us learn the lessons of forgiveness, namely that we are never affected by what happens outside of us that seems to impinge on us. What we are affected by is how we look at what goes on around us. In other words, we're affected by the decision that our mind makes, whether to have the ego be our teacher or the Holy Spirit be our teacher. And that the right-minded way of looking at situations is not how to improve them, not how to change them, not how to forestall them, but what can I learn from them? And that attitude can only come when you accept the basic premise of the Course, that once we are here in the world is a classroom. And as any student knows, when you're in a classroom, you have a teacher. And the idea is, which teacher will you choose to instruct you? Right, so just let me read you a couple of things that Epictetus said about that. On the occasion of every accident that befalls you, remember to turn to yourself and inquire what power you have for turning it to use. Right? And to translate that into Course terms, that no matter what happens to you, no matter how horrific it may seem, try not to forget that you have a teacher inside of you who will tell you how to use this for your own advantage. Meaning that it becomes an opportunity for you to learn to forgive. Right, the final two things, I'll read you kind of similar. All right. These arguments, which I'm now going to give you, are logically absurd. I'm richer than you, therefore I'm better. I'm more eloquent than you, therefore I'm better. All right. In other words, I have a better skill than you. I could speak better than you. I'm wealthier than you, therefore I'm better than you. I have more of an education than you. No, I could fix things and you can't. I'm better than you. I could read a very intellectual book and you can't, and I could understand it. I'm better than you. Right? I could teach a Course in Miracles and you can't. I'm better than you. Right? These are the arguments. The only logical arguments that can be made in these cases are, I'm richer than you, therefore I have more property. In other words, that's an objective fact. Right? I'm more eloquent than you, therefore my speaking style is better than yours. Because these are facts. The interpretation of the fact is I'm better than you because I have this ability. Right. And then he concludes this and he says, remember, you are neither property nor a speaking style. You are not your body. That's what he's saying. The fact is, some people are richer than others. Some people are smarter than others. Some people have more abilities than others. Some people are this than others. So, you're not your body. You're not your property. You're not your speaking style. You're not your life. You're not who you think you are. And we all cling desperately to the image that we think we are. You know, people often will get upset if you mispronounce their name or misspelled their name. They think they're their name. So they're not getting respect because their name is being mispronounced or misspelled. So, you're not your name. You're not your body. You're not anything. You're not anything that's physical or psychological. Finally, whatever principles you have decided on, abide by those principles as if they were laws, as if you would commit a sin against the God by transgressing them. Forget all about the things people might say about you, for these things don't concern you. Why hold off demanding of yourself the most noble improvements? You are no longer a child, but an adult. He's telling everybody, just as Jesus tells us all this course, grow up. Now, he says it kindly, he says it nicely. But the message is very clear. You're not any of these things. Why hold off demanding of yourself the most noble improvements, which is to change your mind? Not change your station in life, to change your mind. Why delay that? That's the most noble thing you could do. Because you're no longer a child, but an adult. If you're negligent and lazy, adding delay to delay, excuse to excuse, and always waiting for tomorrow to get around to bettering yourself, you will accomplish nothing, as if asleep, your entire life. Because that's not the issue. Now is the time to decide to live as a full and grown person. Whatever appears to be the best to you, make that an inviolable law. Whatever appears to be the best to you, make that an inviolable law. And what's best for us is to become right-minded. And his final statement is, though you are not yet a Socrates, always seek to be a Socrates. Though you are not yet a Jesus, always seek to be a Jesus. In other words, grow up. That's what he's telling people. Don't be self-indulgent. Don't be self-pitying. You can do something. You may not be able to change your station in life. Remember, Epictetus began as a slave. And obviously, he had all these ideas even while he was still a slave. And in this sense, it made no difference to him if he was freed or not, as he later was. Of course, you're not made a slave by another person. You're made a slave by your decision for your ego. That's the enslaving agent. You can't be killed by another person. Your body may be killed, but your mind can only be killed when you choose a thought system of death. Anyway, you could see that he was a very wise man. And I think this is another example of how you could see the antecedents to A Course in Miracles. A Course did not just appear full-blown out of thin air. Right, it has very powerful and strong philosophical, psychological, spiritual roots that go back for centuries. All the Course does is put it all together in kind of 20th and 21st century language.